Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The big guy is celebrating his deal with Iran, celebrating by kowtowing with the dictators of Cuba. Let's see what he can do tomorrow. I mean, he did a good deal with the terrorists in Iran who were calling him a liar, saying that nothing that they said was true, I mean that the U.S. said was true, was true. And now, because he's been so successful at kowtowing to the Ayatollahs of the terrorist state of Iran, he's shaking hands with the dictator of Cuba. What can you do? What can you do? I see Harvey Weinstein was cleared of a sex abuse charge, which gives meaning to the statement, in America, it's not who you grope, but who you know. No, it's not who you grope, it's who you know. Harvey Weinstein cleared of all charges, a real shocker. I didn't think that would take too long. Meanwhile, justice has not yet been served with the Fort Hood massacre people. Nidal Hassan, remember the Muslim? Remember Nidal Hassan, the Palestinian-American convicted of fatally killing 13 people, shooting 30 more in cold blood at Fort Hood? Well, Obama finally gave around to giving them Purple Hearts. But this piece of garbage, this piece of filth, this subhuman is still living. Why is he not dead? Can anyone explain to me who's keeping Nidal Hassan alive? I mean, if he was Timothy McVeigh, who had done a thing like this, meaning a blonde, blue-eyed Christian wearing a cross, married with children, goes to a church, do you think he'd be alive all these years after killing so many people? This piece of garbage did this in November of 2009, but he's a Muslim. And as you well know, under the Muslim president, or I mean the Christian president, or whatever, there's two sets of laws, and you don't want to antagonize the Muslim world. So he killed 13, injured 30, and he's still living. Oh, by the way, a little update on a major or colonel, whatever this garbage can is. He was still collecting disability payments. Prior to his 2013 trial and conviction, the Muslim, Nidal Hassan, collected nearly $300,000 in military salary. That's your Defense Department at work. Gay and lesbian rights, gay and lesbian propaganda, diversity training, women who can't fly running the Air Force, women who never drove a rowboat running the Navy. But Nidal Hassan, still living. Update on him, August 28, 2014, his attorney announced that Hassan had written a letter to the head of the ISIS group, the Islamic Murderers, and he said he wants to be made a citizen of the Islamic State. And he's still living. Unbelievable. In America, it's not who you grope, but who you know. In America, it's not who you perform terror upon, it's who you're connected to. And now we move on to something positive on the Savage Nation. Walking around San Francisco this morning before the show, I inhaled the great Bay Air coming up off the bay, and I saw two worlds, the builders and the destroyers. I'm seeing the whole world through a set of different eyes since ISIS has started its Hitler-like rampage in the Middle East. What I see is the world we live in and the world that they live in and would like to drag us into. I don't think you understand what's at stake. I do. As I walked past the coffee shop, I saw people serving coffee and I saw people drinking coffee. I walked past the florist who was setting up for the day. He bought the flowers from a wholesaler down at the wholesale flower market probably 4 a.m. He had to invest capital and the hope that people would come by and buy his flowers today. As I walked past the luggage store, I saw the person putting their luggage out, dusting it off and making it attractive to the customers that would show up. Everywhere I turn, I see these most beautiful buildings in San Francisco, built by the builders. And yet the city is filled with destroyers. Who are the destroyers? The Occupy movement. They have never built even an anthill. They're the vermin of our society. And yet Nancy Pelosi, one of the richest women in the history of the world, has the nerve to embrace the Occupy movement as though they are the harbingers of civilization when they're the harbingers of our death and demise. Everywhere you turn in San Francisco, you see the builders at work, people who take a chance and buy a building, clean it up, fix it up, rent it out, hope to make a profit. Capitalism at work. That's what built civilizations. That's what built civilizations from day one. Not the destroyers, not ISIS, who would blow it all up and enslave us with their belief in the single sufficiency of a single book called the Quran, the 9th century throwbacks. Two worlds, whether it's the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, they're in the world of the creators, the builders. And yet we have in America the leftists, who are the destroyers, along with their cousins in ISIS, who would destroy the entire world. Just an observation, beautiful morning. Question, why is Nidal Hassan still alive? Who is keeping him alive? Why is Obama now gallivanting off to Cuba after failing on the world stage? The man tripped on his Pinocchio nose. He tripped on the Pinocchio nose with Iran. And he gets away with it because of guys like Thomas Friedman of the New York Times. Men who have no shame. Men who have no conscience. Men who would have worked happily for another dictatorship at another time. At least I think so. How can they justify going to bat for this character who is a walking wreckage? Now, I'm going to do something today and not use the Obama word after I say the word Obama again. He's going to catch me again, Robert. Every time I say the word Obama, he's going to ring a bell to make sure I don't do it. It's going to be a Pavlovian condition reflex. I am so sick of him. I so despise him. I'm so nauseated by this fraud. I'm sick of him. I'm sick of the liar and the failure and the America hater. So I'm not going to say his name again today. We're going to try and have an Obama-free day. Oh, I made the mistake. Sorry. And then what do we have to look forward to this weekend? The Hildebeest is going to make an announcement? Are you serious? This piece of guava on the jungle floor is now running for office? What qualifications does Hillary have to be president? Would it be her track record as Secretary of State? Let's make a list of the wonderful things she has achieved as Secretary of State. Let's see. She destroyed the Middle East. She turned our allies into enemies and our enemies into allies. That immediately in a sane nation would disqualify her. But then again, sane nations don't permit men like Thomas Friedman to go to journalism school. The most they could do is run a couple of kosher delis in Boca Raton if they had a family with money. I don't even think that they can get to that stage. Meanwhile, the stock market is booming. The dollar is closing in on a 12-year high. Yeah, another Secret Service officer arrested. Another one. What's going on there? And then there's the police beatings. Starting to bother me. Now a horseback beating. A shocker. First, the guy gets shot in the back the other day. You know where I stand on that. Now you watch a horseback beating. Deputies in Southern California. A bunch of them, 11, I don't know how many, beating up a man after a horse chase. He's on the ground. He puts his hands behind his back to be cuffed after they get him off the horse. And they almost beat him to death. Kicking him in the head. Stomping on him. Why? Why do you think so many police seem to be breaking down in America? I have a theory. And here's my theory. They live in such a lawless society where the governor of the state of California is a lawless criminal who opens the borders to illegal aliens, which is a crime, including criminal aliens, including diseased aliens, giving away welfare to non-citizens, that he's committing one of the greatest crimes you could imagine. We have a president who floods America with illegal aliens. Thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. Meets with dictators, breaks our laws on a regular basis. So the police, who are on the front lines, are cracking up. They ask themselves every day as they put on their vests and kiss their wives and children goodbye, they ask why they should follow the law. That's number one. Number two, the police are ruled by feminists. They're ruled by constraints that are out of control. I'm not justifying what the police may be doing in these cases, but I'm trying to explain from a psychological point why so many of them seem to be snapping. They can't take the pressure they're under. Again, not to justify shooting the guy the other day. I'm on record with that one. Nor beating the guy on the horse. I'm on record with that one. I'm doing this as a radio psychologist. So many police departments seem to be cracking under the strain of the oppressive, liberal, socialist, lawless government of Barack Obama and Jerry Brown. Yep, I made a mistake. I said his name again. I said his name again. That opens us up to a little callers here. 855-400-7282. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN.
I don't know if that's the version I like. I always like this song. Is that sure that's him? Sure it's not like Paul Whitman? So it doesn't have the fervor that it had when I was 18. I think you have to be on heroin or something to enjoy it. It's too discursive. I can't relate to it at all. Let me have some rock and roll instead on Rock and Roll Friday, since I'm on Chinese food and Diet Coke. Let's see what I can hear in the rock and roll department. You know, I don't know. You know, everything's falling apart. Chinese restaurants I've gone to for 40 years. Here we go again. I'm supposed to get excited. All right, big deal. At least it doesn't have the word O in it. Turn it off. I'm not in a schmaltzy mood. I don't know. Nothing's worse. It's a beautiful day. But I was saying, as I walked around San Francisco before the show, the Savage Nation, by the way, you're listening to, this is not a thought coming in on your filling from a UFO. It's actually a human being called Michael Savage. I know many of you said, well, what is this guy? Is this a talk show or what? What is he talking about? I have no idea what he's saying. Well, listen another few seconds. I'm actually speaking English. This is what English sounds like. This is what it actually sounds like. It doesn't sound like people from England. They don't speak English. But nevertheless, here we go. So I'm walking around before the show. I told you about the flower, and I see the two civilizations, the buildings, and I think about the people who took chances and built them up, and what a great civilization we have. And I think of ISIS. Everything I look at now, I see with two minds. One is the world I live in, and one is the world that's coming, unless they are annihilated from the planet with all their spawn. All their spawn onto the third gen. They have to be wiped off the planet. You have no idea what's coming. It's like a tsunami, a tidal wave sitting out there about to sweep over America because of open borders, because of a, if not an open, let us say, collaborator with them, let us say a wink, wink, nod, nod government that claims we're winning the war against ISIS when in fact they're making advances. I woke up this morning and I see the Saudi Air Force couldn't stop them in Yemen. They've retreated into their caves to weapons that they hid up in the mountains. And now the Saudis have to send in ground troops. And they lost a lot of ground troops the last time they went to war with any of these crazy maniacs in an earlier incarnation, that is. And that's happening. And Obama doesn't lift much of a finger against them. We have an army. We have a navy. We have an air force. And it's given to global warming issues. The nut in the White House has the audacity while visiting Cuba to say that that's the greatest threat to our civilization. Global warming, and I don't understand why he's not immediately taken away with men with butterfly nets. This is insanity. It's insanity. Pure insanity. So I look at even the shoemaker, the guy who polishes shoes in the Embarcadero Center. You know, it's early in the morning. And here's a guy just shining a shoe. Look at civilization through the eye of a shoe shiner. And you see, what man wants a shoe shine? A man who wants to look good. A man who wants to go out there and sell something. Or a man who wants to go out there and do something. So he has his shoe shined. It's the mark of civilization. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? And then you look around San Francisco at all the beaten up people, many of whom have the money to buy clothing. They look like they've just come out of a Salvation Army giveaway center. Everyone tries to outdo everyone else with ugly clothing. Malfitting, ripped shoes. The men don't know how to dress. The women look, all of them, like they just came out of, I don't know what? There's no clothing anymore. What happened to the clothing industry in the country? Everyone tries to outdo everyone else with looking bad to try and identify with the losers of society. That's all. Dirty, filthy, downbeaten. And you know how this all started? Do you remember in the 1960s, those of you who remember the 60s, everyone was talking about various and sundry books. And one of them was Freud's From Civilization and Its Discontents. I don't know if you know how important it is that I tell you about this. Ideas matter. Ideas are the cause of everything. ISIS is raging on one idea, which is to kill everybody else, including fellow Muslims who are not fanatical enough. They're basing it on the idea of a 9th century fanatic that they're following. You understand that? And it's only ideas that can save us from them.
So you go back and you look at what happened to this society from the 1960s. You saw degenerates like Allen Ginsberg, Timothy Leary, and some lawyers who destroyed the society, along with the radical feminists who I could name like on the fingers on my hand. They ripped society apart. And as a result, let me go backwards, but there's a little bit more to it. A lot of the people who were very heavily into the counterculture movement of the 60s would always try to act very intellectual and say, oh, you know, Freud wrote Civilization and His Discontents. I was like, yeah, really, man. That society's really screwed up, right? Well, what was the alternative? Well, it was moving to Woodstock, I guess, and living off the land and getting chlamydia. That's the alternative? Living with chlamydia? That's the title of the autobiography of Woodstock. Living with chlamydia for 50 years. I'm not talking about their cousin. So a lot of people thought that by leaving civilization, they would find something better, more meaning. But it was all part of the hate America, hate civilization mentality. Instead of buying a shiny new car, they bought a broken down Volkswagen van. What are they driving today? I have no idea. I mean, they're not riding a horse. They're not sitting on the back of a water buffalo. They're all riding cars. And all they do is mutter about global warming. It's a continuation of the same falsehood that civilization is no good. Well, what's the alternative? ISIS? That is blowing up statues that are 1,200 years old? Buddhist statues, Hindu statues, Assyrian statues, and the UN does nothing, nothing but collect their money and run off on junkets to study AIDS in Thailand, if you get the meaning. That's the world we live in. From civilization and its discontents to our civilization, the only heaven on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Okay, Riverview Hotel, South Fallsburg, New York. Owner was a former Jewish boxer. Beat up the help if they didn't perform properly. You talk about workplace abuse. This guy was one of those two-fisted tough guys. No one would steal a fork. Every other hotel, they were robbing strawberry shortcake from him at night, soda. The busboys wouldn't take a fork out of the dining. They're afraid he beat him up on the lawn. I once saw him beat up a waiter who insulted him, insulted the wife or insulted a customer, beat him up through a suitcase on the road and threw him out onto Route 42. Then there's that famous story I tell you about. I'm just going to go and do nostalgia. I'm so tired of the world I'm in. I have to dream. I want to just talk for a while. I don't even want to think. Can I talk without thinking and just give you a savage, famous, savage Frankfurter sandwich, which consists of free association, and it's longer than a foot-long hot dog because it goes on forever. It has no beginning and no middle and no end. I'm doing so many things at once that it's a swirl. As you know, I have the new novel coming out in a few weeks called, what? Countdown to Mecca, right? It's going to be very good because it's right on target. Because it's all about Iran trying to get the bomb and what a group of generals do to try and stop it and how Jack in hears about it and tries to stop them. It's an amazing story with new characters. That's the most. I'm thinking about that in the middle of the night. At the same time, I'm writing my next Stop the Coming Civil War sequel for next October. And that's daily, every day, in the middle of the night. I'm getting up dictating. Middle of the night, my mind's swirling. And to relax from this, I've been writing an experimental novel going back last November that is, I think, very unique. I started watercolors again. Remember I told you I started painting? I hadn't picked up a paintbrush since the 1980s. All of a sudden, I started painting again. I had maybe a dozen pictures, that's all. And they're not great, but they're descriptive. And people who understand art say that my style is extremely minimalist, unique, and that I must be a real great painter somewhere and I'm hiding it, that kind of stuff. People like it. So I came to an idea the other night that I'm going to take my experimental novel, which, by the way, busts apart gender identity. You're never going to believe what I did because I do things in it with gender that I've never done before. I switch genders of certain characters by saying he or she, and I switch back to she or she or he and he or he or she said to her or he said to he. I start breaking gender down in the book without even trying, and then you don't know why I'm doing it. But it's actually a detective novel about a missing FBI agent. And it's all about dreams. And I'm going to take the watercolors I've been doing,
along with my experimental ideas in this novel, which were written in like less than one page pieces over this is 4 or 5 months, 6 months, I don't know how long. And I'm putting it together in my own book sometime in the next year. It's not a big, I may call it The White Owl because of the White Owl Dream. Remember that? Anyway, so I'm doing that. And then I'm thinking about all the other stuff that I have to do. All my journals, what I'm going to do with all of the journals and my archives and the tapes that I have and the radio shows from 1994. I have some young man crunching them down into CDs. There's no moving pictures of those. So maybe I'm doing too much and I need a vacation. I don't know. I know where to go. I get there. I don't want to be there. I'm one of these guys. Then I come back here to San Francisco, which I love. I love the water. I love the bay. I'm a water person. I can't be far from the water. I get a little just off, okay? I'm that kind of, you know how certain plants grow next to the water? I'm one of those plants. I'm also good at the High Sierra, which I haven't been to for years, but there's no snow there. Truckee River is dried out. There really is a drought. There's a drought of ideas and integrity more than there is a lack of water. But nevertheless, I love the water. I come back here. But everything's changing. Nothing is the same. A Chinese restaurant that I've gone to for 40 years, who know me, I order food before the show on the phone and send my assistant to get the same dish. I said, give me the special, leave out the chicken, and put in extra seafood. It's like $17 for this garbage, right? So they leave out the chicken, and there's no seafood in it. It's just vegetables. Because they figure that's what they do to you on takeout food. I don't understand. They think I'm going to be happy with that. I'll never go back to it. But I do anyway. It's just you go on and on. Everyone seems to be cheating everybody. Which is why in ancient Rome, you look at ancient Rome, do you know that they actually developed a bureau of weights and measures? Because in ancient Rome, the man who made the bread was robbing people by not serving them, let's say, a whole loaf. Like Obama's not serving us a whole loaf. Robert, you missed the bell. I didn't mean to drift into it. He's not giving us a whole loaf. He's telling us we're getting a whole loaf of a presidency, but there's about an eighth of a loaf there because he's always loafing. I can go on with the loaf metaphor, but I think I'll let it alone. He's loafing along, having a good time. Who stops him? Blows up a relationship with the terror state of Iran, tells it's a wonderful deal, it's on this piece of paper. It's worse than Neville Chamberlain. There wasn't even a deal, they said. They said he's a liar, a psychopath, basically. And that's coming from world-class terrorists, no less. Even they called him a liar. Who covered for him? Thomas Friedman of the New York Times knows how to make a Windsor knot. He knows how to cross his legs in a chair. That's his qualification to be a journalist. So he gets away. He's on vacation. He's in Jamaica the other day. I love Jamaica. Now he's in Cuba, kowtowing to the Castro brothers, who immediately spit on him. The minute he gets to Cuba and he reaches out to them, they give him a spit job. They put demands on him right away, immediately. Immediately, they demand everything. Here's a state sponsor of terrorism. People are still living in medieval prisons in Cuba. And he wants improved ties with them, with the Castros. And immediately they put out demands. All right, here he comes. Let's see what we can get him. Okay, we want Guantanamo. We want reparations. And let's see what else we want. And we want that before you sign a letter with us. And he'll tell us a deal. He'll come back with a piece of paper again. Hey, I'm back, man. Just had a great trip down in the Caribbean. Look at the deal I have in my hand. Look at this. Signed by the Castro brothers, man. Life is good. Life is real good. It's good when no one criticizes you because they're afraid of being called a racist. Yes, indeedy. Yes, indeedy. Kowtowing to Cuba now after kowtowing to Iran. I don't know what to feel more. What will hurt us more, relations with Iran or Cuba? I don't know what's worse. How do you think the rest of South America is going to respond to your president normalizing relations with the terrorist state of communist Cuba? It's unbelievable to me. And Hillary on Sunday, I don't know, I think I'm going to be out of the country. If I can catch a plane out of America where there's no television, because I don't want to see the sickos, the psychophants in the media, what's going to go on when this one makes the announcement. You would think that she's a combination of Martha Washington and you name all of the famous women figures, Marie Curie. Think of the famous women in history. Marie Curie, I learned of in high school, right? Other great women. Think of great women through time. Martha Washington, Marie Curie, Marie Curie. That's like Mercury. Marie Curie in France. But great women through time. Now, she's a combo of all of them. What has she done? Destroyed the Middle East. Lied about Benghazi. Erased emails against the law. Did everything possible to obfuscate her failures. That's qualification in America, I guess. After this one in the presidency? After him, I guess that's a qualification. I'd rather see a drone as president than listen to her drone on and on. I've been so long down there, tired that I... Do you remember that speech? Ask Doug to get that on us for the next segment. She used to go into states of mind that she appeared before different audiences. When she spoke to Jews in South Florida, she started speaking with a rising inflection. You think I'm a Midwestern girl? Don't be kidding. Don't fool yourself. But then when she would go before black audiences, she would start to speak in tongues. And we have that. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. What tongue is she going to speak in next? The forked one, probably. All right. I've made my point. I had my fun. Why is the perpetrator of the Fort Hood massacre, the Muslim Major Nidal Hassan, not executed? Answer, because the Defense Department is wholly owned, controlled by Obama. And as a result, the man is still alive. Period. You know, if he was blonde-haired, blue-eyed Christian, and he looked like Timothy McVeigh, and he did such a horrible thing, he'd be dead a long time ago. But, you know, as I said with the Harvey Weinstein case, I said right at the beginning of the show, the groping is over. Well, you know, I'm actually glad he got off on that one. She looked like a real piece of work, this Italian model, looking for a little... She got her 15 seconds of fame there. She was one of those who accused Berlusconi, you know, a professional accuser, it looks like to me. Oh, he touched me! Like, he did... let's say he even did that. That's the first time anyone touched her dress? I'm asking you a question. Harvey Weinstein will not be charged following allegations of groping Italian model. Just the two words Italian model, I mean, is an acronym for something else. Italian model. She goes in his office and wants a part in a movie. And he says he groped her. See, I almost did the gender switch that I'm doing in the novel. I said, she said, he said, groped me. He said she groped me. I can't keep up with it anymore. Not face charges in the alleged casting couch groping of a young Italian model in his Tribeca office, the Daily News learned today. The Manhattan DA passed on a prosecution of the Oscar-winning Weinstein in the bizarre, now it's a bizarre encounter. That's all. The two were alone in the office during the meeting, creating a he said, she said scenario. Well, I'm glad that he got off. Because he said, she said, period, end of story. The young model went to Weinstein's third floor office one day after the pair met on the red carpet at a Radio City Music Hall event. I remember the Rockettes when I was a young kid. My mother took me to see the Rockettes. I wonder where they are today. Probably have like transfusion trees and walkers, old women in like Fort Lauderdale. I always want to see Rockette. Terrible what time and gravity does to us. And us guys are, we're luckier. I mean, that's terrible on women. I'm not being sexist about it. How does that work? Women are stronger than us, but time doesn't... and you know, the botch jobs I'm seeing around Marin County now, women's faces, this is an out of control. I see women, they frighten me. They think they look youthful to themselves in the mirror. Between Botox and the shysters in the dermatology business, whatever... The surgery they're doing in these women, they look like botched cases. They all look like cases that could wind up in court for botched surgery, most of the women. And they probably look at themselves in the mirror putting on lipstick. They think they look 18 again. I'd rather see a saggy face that's real. It's shocking. But I've seen it on men, too, when I would go to Florida every once in a while. I go to that great place, which I love. Love the place, Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago. The men are 90 and their faces look like a drum. There's no skin. It's like pulled. It's pulled back so many times. They like moon people. What do they see when they look in the mirror? The men there. They're always like with a woman 50 who looks 30 in her mind. A hot chick. He's 90. She's 50, and she thinks she's 20. And I'm supposed to eat around that. Is it any wonder I go to cheap Chinese restaurants in San Francisco alone with the dog? And the dog's off today. He's with the groomer. He's with Irene. He gets us Friday and Monday. And so I have a day off, really. So I'm glad Weinstein got off. It's a he said, she said, right?
Why should she automatically be believed? That's what's put so many men in jail on false charges. And by the way, I'm going to tell you something else. You know, this terrible thing of that black guy getting shot in the back. Well, we saw the new video that came out last night, the actual dash camera of the pullover job in the old Mercedes. The cops writing him up. He runs out of his car, runs away. Why? Because he was out. He had outstanding warrants for non-payment of child support, right? So you can blame the feminists for killing him. I mean, the cops shot him in the back, but because of this draconian insanity of locking men up who cannot pay child support, and instead of working it out with them, putting him in jail, the guy ran away, didn't want to go to jail, and the rest is history. There's a lot of blame to go around. Don't misinterpret what I just said, okay? There's a lot of blame, and we have a broken society. It's falling apart. The wheels have come off our foreign policy. The wheels have come off our domestic policy. The wheels have come off our borders. The wheels have come off our language. The wheels have come off our culture. And we have a maniac at the wheel driving without a steering wheel in his hand. That's a good metaphor. You like it? I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-COIN.
All right, so we got a lot to look forward to this Sunday. The announcement on Twitter by Hillary Clinton. Shock, she's going to run for the presidency. She's been running ever since they left the office. So I don't know what accent she's liable to use. The southern accent, the black church accent, the visit to a Boca Raton Jewish retirement community, an accent that's more Midwestern for the Gen X, Gen Y, millennial generations. And I don't know, or it could be the one that you're about to hear, because this was used once on a campaign trail. Listen.
I don't feel no ways tired. Too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me.
Are they all crazy? I don't understand it. I feel like I'm from Brobbingdang, from another planet. I know Obama's a liar and a psychopath. I said it, I'm sorry. She's unqualified at any speed. She's going to use class warfare, race warfare, economic warfare. Listen to what she said. I'm more convinced than ever that our future in the 21st century depends on our ability to ensure that a child born in the hills of Appalachia or the Mississippi Delta or the Rio Grande Valley grows up at the same shot of success that Charlotte will, referring to a granddaughter. Well, they do. It's called equality, which we have in the land. It's been in the land, the law of the land, for a very long time. I come from a poor background. No one gave me a hand up. I was told from childhood I have to work very hard to get anything out of life. And I failed many times, over and over again. I failed, but it wasn't my failure. I wasn't failing. It was society failing me. I could have given up and become a maniac, but I kept trying. But Hillary's going to push the lie that blacks and Hispanics and women and the disabled and gays and lesbians and transgendered don't have an equal shot at success.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The Pentagon has already said that climate change is a primary national security threat that we're going to face. And we are working on the Department of Defense. To start
with
preparing
guns
for that and mitigating for that. And a lot of our international policy and national security policy is centered around the very real concerns that that's going to raise.
I always like saccharine music. I mean, talented saccharine music. I get it. I never knew about his sex orientation, nor did I care. I saw a short guy with a good voice with a lot of hair. What did I expect? I'm expecting him to be a man and a woman. Come on, big deal.
Harvey Weinstein, he groped her. He didn't grope her. A judge threw it out of New York. No, she's going to win. An Italian model is going to win in New York. I'm glad she didn't win. It's like he said, she said, she said, she said, he said, he said. Now, what'd she expect, the Italian model? She went up there for a part with Harvey Weinstein. Take a look at his face. He's nuts altogether. Why didn't he have someone there with him? I mean, a doctor today can't even examine a woman unless there's someone in the room with him. They're so crazy. He touched me. I'm a doctor. Of course I touched her. They don't touch you anymore. Anyway, well, that's why they don't touch you. The doctor's afraid to look at you, let alone not touch you. He looks at the wall. A woman comes in, he won't even look at her. He stares at a chart or a computer. He looks in the computer and says, how are you today, Mary? And she's on the other side of the room shivering in a nightgown. He's not looking at her. He's afraid of getting sued. Plus, he's not a diagnostician. They're no longer healers. What hands-on healers? If he was a hands-on healer, he'd be arrested for groping her. In other words, your grandfather's the medicine of not too long ago would be considered groping today. Be with the insane lawyers and the feminist movement, right? Not that there's not real groping, but come on. Then we got the strange case of the feminist Hillary Clinton running. A feminist? What on what campaign is she going to run? Well, I think the hint is pretty clear. Income inequality. She gets money from Morocco, Saudi Arabia. How about that for income inequality? How about campaign fund inequality? How do they get away with it? Answer, Thomas Friedman of the New York Times and other fellow travelers. So what can I tell you? So I don't know what accent she's going to use when she announces on Twitter on Sunday that she's going to run for office. Oh, that is so big a deal. She's announcing on Twitter to show how with it and cool she is. Ooh, look at that. Look at that old woman, man. Oh, she's not old. She's making her announcement on Twitter. Well, that's pretty good. Well, ISIS makes announcements on Twitter, too, now. I mean, that's not that exciting. Announcement in 140 characters or less, including spaces. Let's see. I survived a sexist husband. Vote for me. I'm Hillary Clinton. Let's see. I was the worst Secretary of State in history. Vote for me. I'm a woman. Hillary Clinton. Let's see. Don't believe the right wing about Benghazi. I had nothing to do with it. Vote for me. I'm Hillary Clinton. Let's see. My concept of the Arab Spring turned into the Arab Winter. I'm Hillary Clinton. Vote for me. But I still don't know what accent she's liable to use because she's an expert. She's like a Charlie McCarthy of the political world. You got to hand it to her. She's very talented. She can speak in different tongues in front of Jewish audiences with a rising inflection, because if they're older Jews, they used to speak with rising inflections. No one does anymore. They have to be over 80, I think, to speak with a rising inflection. What'd she say? Excuse me, Minnie, what'd she say? So she would speak in that accent. And then the famous, I don't know if it's going to be a millennial accent, Gen Y accent, Gen X accent, or it could be the black church accent. Listen carefully.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me.
I can't believe it. I mean, do I live in the stupidest country on earth? I used to mock Uruguay when I was a kid. When I was a kid growing up, I'd read the Daily News. I look at what's going on in other countries. Women were pregnant at 9. There's always like a story about a girl 9 who had a baby in Peru. I used to look at what? I was in the 4th grade. There were 9-year-old girls. I was like scratching my head. They were pregnant in Peru? I don't understand. How could you get pregnant in Peru at 9? It must have been the cocaine or the coca leaf. I didn't know. I didn't understand it. But I would see all sorts of things that made no sense. A child fell out of a 5th floor window, I remember, and they would have front page stories of child falls from 5th floor and lives, and they would like show an arrow, and he would bounce off an awning, hit the ground, dust himself off, and go to school the next day. I don't understand. There's all sorts of different people on the earth. So now we're facing a Hitler raging across the globe called ISIS. Hitler's back. He's speaking Arabic and wearing a headscarf. He's not wearing a swastika. Raging in an out-of-control blitzkrieg the way the Vikings were raging in their time. Conducting themselves the way the Huns did, decimating, killing, raping, kidnapping, murdering. And she's talking about income inequality, and Goofball is talking about global warming. The Pentagon confirmed that our biggest threat is global warming. It's not ISIS. No wonder they can't beat ISIS if all the schmucks in the Pentagon are working on. All right, guys, here's what we're doing. They bring in the feminists. Forget about ISIS. It's not real. It's not happening. They're not Islamic. Just put it aside. There's no war over there, okay? Your new war is global warming. So they want to keep their pensions and their jobs, and they know what to do. All right, global warming, down the line. Everyone write papers on global warming. And then they write papers on global warming. So again, it's like I'm living in Brobdingnag. It's a world upside down. It's crazy. Nothing makes sense to me. Nothing. Everything's crazy. We're living in a mad, mad world. 855-400-7282 is the phone number. Let me take a caller or two. KSFO Radio is unprotected talk. I don't know what they're calling about. I really don't. Honest to God. I just see the name. I see no name. I see the station. Line 4, KSFO Radio. Go ahead, please.
I guess that means me. This is Giovanni, and I'm on my way to Truckee. I'm about less than a mile from the Donner Memorial Summit Bridge. Anyway, I kind of take, I don't want to say offense, but you made a comment about child support and the feminists factoring into this gentleman's death in Carolina, I think it was South Carolina. And I think that that needs to be developed because it's almost as if you don't take any issue with the child support that was placed on this man and that he should be in jail, if anything. But I think that the bigger threat are the feminists.
Wait, hold on now. What if a man cannot pay child support by putting him in jail? What, that increases the child support or eliminates it and makes it zero?
No, they still, there's no way you can get rid of the child support. For example, the only way
you didn't hear what I just said to you. The poor guy was shot in the back in North Carolina, was running from the police when the cops stopped. He didn't arrest him right away. He just went and checked his, computer calling. And then the guy ran out of his car because he knew he was outstanding on child support payments. He was running, in my opinion, because he didn't want to go to jail on that. So that's what started the whole thing going.
Exactly. But I think that if men stood up and wanted to affect change in the child support system, we wouldn't let these feminists have so much control where they can put a warrant out for your arrest for failure to pay child support.
But that's what I just said. But that's what I was just saying, my friend. I thank you for listening halfway. That's nice to have one ear on the wheel and one ear on the crack music and one ear on me. All right, whatever. That's what I just said. If you can afford to pay child support, you'll pay child support. If you can't, well, someone has to coerce you sometimes. But by arresting a man who can't afford to pay child support, does that help the child? No, it punishes the man. And that's what the feminists have done to our court system. Do you know how many men are in prison on child support payments? The jails are overflowing. You talk about false drug charges. How about releasing all the men on child support cases and let them go out and make a living instead of this mean, vindictive behavior? 855-400-7282. There's one chapter I've got to read this to you. It's from my forthcoming novel, Countdown to Mecca, which I really wish you would take very seriously, and I know you will. And it's an astounding novel. It's a great read for those of you who actually still read. You could do it on Kindle, too, but you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's my best novel to date of this type, of this series. Not an experimental novel at all. This is a thriller. It is what it is. And Countdown to Mecca is all about Iran racing to get the bomb. And then a group of generals conspire to stop Iran from getting the bomb by going rogue. Okay? And their conspiracy is overheard by a group of prostitutes, including the Russian character I introduced, Anastasia Vincent, who I said her eyes normally alert as those of a Nordic wolf seem very wary and frightened. And then there's Sammy Michaels, who's Jack's half-brother, who I introduced, who's a clown. He lives next to her. And you know which apartment building they live in? Those of you who live in San Francisco, I based it upon the old Humphrey Bogart building on the top of on Telegraph Hill on Montgomery Street, next to the Filbert Street steps. There's a chase scene in this book that when it's made into a movie, which it will be one day, down the Filbert Street steps onto the Embarcadero, and one of the villains gets run over by a trolley car, which is so beautiful. I remember I was walking there, and I came up with it. Then there's Saul, the Jewish gangster. He's the good gangster, as if there's such a thing. All new characters. Saul Minsky. It was a good name, I came with, like Minsky Burlesque and Saul. You could just picture him, right? And he actually joins Jack in defending him against the CIA, who's trying to knock him off. The generals are trying to kill him because they know Jack is on to stopping them. There's all sorts of weapons in here and alcohol.
descriptions of alcohol. Now, speaking of alcohol, I was thinking again about my earlier idea of how to stop the rampage in the Middle East by ISIS. And I still think my original idea holds merit. Instead of bombing and killing them, I think there's a more humane way. If we dropped 1 million plastic bottles of booze, varieties, bourbon, scotch, vodka, rum, on the desert where they are, just like little parachutes full of booze, and then 1 million copies of Playboy or Penthouse, they'd fight over it. They'd fight over the booze and the magazines. They may come to their senses. They may, instead of wanting to kill, maybe they'd want to go out and, you know what I'm saying? It might change the world. Maybe they're deprived of alcohol. That could be the problem. And they run on what? What are they jazzed? They're jacked up on something. They're not allowed to drink alcohol. Meanwhile, the princes in Saudi Arabia knock it down pretty good in the back rooms there of their castles, their palaces. I had friends that were in the oil business years ago. They said, are you kidding? There's no alcohol in Saudi Arabia? You must be joking. There's two sets of rules in Saudi Arabia. They all have a bar, like a hidden wall that comes spinning around. Hypocrisy, hypocrisy, hypocrisy. Not a bad idea. I mean, you think about it. You drop 1 million bottles of airline booze in the plastic bottles, not glass, because it might break. And you know, look what's this stuff. And then the magazines to go with it. I said, oh, let me try one. The guy isn't looking. Won't come. And the whole world changes. Gets a bag on in the desert, looks at the magazine. He might throw his gun down and flee. He might come back and take a regular job in the country that he left. Who knows? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN.
The Rubio Circus comes around Monday. We had the Ted Cruz Circus. We had the Rand Paul Circus. Now, Sunday's the Clinton Circus. Then Monday we got the Rubio Circus. I don't believe this. And the country's in turmoil. The head clown is in Cuba after wrecking relations with Iran, selling us down the river with Iran and selling it. Now, after 5 years, Purple Hearts awarded to those who went into the fight at Fort Hood. What fight? They're running away from a maniac Muslim with a loaded gun. What run into the fight? They're running away. They were disarmed. They had been disarmed years ago by a president who was afraid of a coup. Imagine military men in this country are disarmed on military bases because the cowards in the government know how corrupt they are. They're afraid of a military coup. So men walk around without a BB gun. They couldn't defend themselves against this maniac. You look at the newspapers. It's unbelievable. The lead stories, huh? Lead story. South Carolina shooting case will head to a grand jury. That's a big case, but the bigger case is how a president who sells us down the river to a terrorist state like Iran can then dance off and now make nice with the terrorist state of Cuba. And not a word. Suddenly it's a new Cuba. To who? Who said it's a new Cuba? Him? When did it become a new Cuba? Why is it in our interest now suddenly to shake hands with the Castros, who immediately made him into a jerk? Immediately they made him into a jerk, just like the Iranians. He doesn't understand the first thing about negotiation. If he wants us to do a deal with him, we'll ask for more right up front. That's how the game is played. That's how they hardball it. Hey, man, we'd like to reach out to you, make nice to you, because I wanted part of my legacy. You know, my next three Nobel Prizes are being lined up right now. So we're going to put Nobel for Iran, Nobel for Cuba. So, okay, great. Tell you what we want. We want Guantanamo back, and we want reparations. That's what they asked for. And again, it'll come back like smelling like, oh, here it comes, the hailing hero, hail Caesar. All hail Caesar. He has returned. He has returned. Hey, there, man. Great golfing down there in the south. Little trip over to the islands. Got to get back to work now. Go to the desk, shoot some hoops after work. Yes, indeedy. A comedy show couldn't have done it better than putting this man in the White House. Except it's no joke what he's doing to the world and weakening our national security. Because a speech, the greatest threat to our survival is not radical Islam because it doesn't exist, but it's global warming, the boogeyman of global warming. And Hillary Clinton's coming along Sunday, and the big threat to survival in America is income inequality. So why'd she take billions of dollars from Morocco, Saudi Arabia, and all the other countries? Because of income inequality or because she's a hypocrite and a liar like the rest of them? That's why I say it's very hard to do this show without losing your mind. When I come back, I have an important book about ISIS with Michael Weiss, Inside the Army of Terror, which I found amazing. Saw him on CNN, and I thought he was a very intelligent young man. The book is really great, and I was reading it last night. Teddy was sitting next to me on the couch, and I was actually shocked. I mean, I know that they're rampaging and the blitzkrieg is not being stopped, but I want to find out how they got so far so fast and how they can be stopped from a man who knows the inside story of the Army of Terror. That's what we're going to talk about the minute I return right here on the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Now we turn from the fictional threat to our existential survival of global warming to the non-fictional reality of the threat to our survival called radical Islam, especially in the form that it has taken in the Middle East, known as ISIS, the Islamic State. Of course, the president says there is no Islamic State. He focuses on other things, but it's a very real issue. And I saw a young man on CNN a few weeks ago, Michael Weiss, with his book, ISIS Inside the Army of Terror. And I thought it was so good that I read the book last night. And he joins us now on the Savage Nation. Michael Weiss, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
So you make an interesting statement in the book, which is, why are we so shocked by this? And you're right. It was as if the Viet Cong had returned under a different banner and laid siege to a third of Southeast Asia in 1985, only to be marveled at and sensationalized as a surprising and unknown guerrilla insurgency by everyone from the Reagan administration to CNN. If ever there was a familiar foe, you're right, ISIS was it. And then you confirm what I suspected, because I'm no expert on this, you are, that many of their operatives, especially their leadership, comes from Saddam's Republican Guard. Is that correct?
Not just the Republican Guard, from the ranks of the Iraqi military under Saddam and the Mukhabarat, which were the security services. I'm pleased to see the Washington Post had a very good piece by Liz Sly corroborating a lot of what we had in our book. We go through some of the upper echelons of ISIS's leadership. When I say their leadership, things have changed in the past 8 months, and it's hard to tell who's been killed on the battlefield, either by U.S. airstrikes or by, any of the ground forces that are battling ISIS. But as of this writing, the leadership was heavily populated by ex-Saddamists. And so the question...
But when they worked for Saddam Hussein, were they committing this kind of atrocities? Were they raping, murdering, kidnapping, killing children, cutting their hands off?
Absolutely, absolutely. I keep telling people that the only thing that distinguishes ISIS from most of the state actors in both the Levant and Mesopotamia for the last 40 years is marketing or advertising. Saddam used to put dissidents into burlap sacks with feral cats as a form of torture. Saddam's children, Uday and Qusay Hussein, used to drive down the streets of Baghdad, and if they saw a girl they'd like, they'd point to her. Their goons would capture her, and they'd bring them back to one of their many palaces and rape the hell out of her for as long as they pleased.
So, in other words, George Bush had justification for taking out that evil family, but he didn't do the job well enough?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can certainly make this case. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I had my own preconceptions about the Iraq War going into the book, and they changed. I think I reported my way into a different kind of stance on it, which was you can certainly justify the removal of a genocidal tyrant like Saddam, but
right.
The way in which the war was conducted from start to finish was so excruciatingly bad. And when we got our act together around 2006 to about 2008, 2009, if you're generous, it was as if we unlearned everything that we had learned through blood and treachery.
Look, I'm not a military expert, so I don't want to argue with it. I think that the taking out of the Saddam's military was done in a manner that was remarkable to watch as a civilian, but that's not the issue. The issue is ISIS, the atrocities that are going on. Here's the thing, Michael, you're an expert on the mind of these psychopaths. How do they claim to be such pure Muslims and yet rape? How do they justify that?
Well, for the raping of, say, the Yazidi women, they delve into Islamic theology. You can find rationales for this. The conquering of non-Muslim land, there's a kind of dispensation for the spoils, including the taking of sexual slaves, or sabiha, as they call them. So a lot of their fighters join ISIS thinking, great, you know, I mean, we're doing God's work here, and we will be rewarded, not just in the afterlife, but on the mortal coil. I would argue this. ISIS has managed to very adroitly, you know, there's been a lot of debate in the U.S. about how Islamic are they? Is it fair to even describe them as Islamic? I think it's the height of stupidity to deny an Islamic caste or component to ISIS. But, I mean, the very name we use, including what the president calls them, ISIS, stands for the Islamic State. That said, the people at the top, and this again comes back to their origins in the Saddam regime, are they looking to usher in Armageddon? No, I don't think so. I think they see this fundamentally as a political project pursued through totalitarian and messianic means. So the rank and file, the young people who are coming from around the world, including from the United States, to join them, the infantry, they absolutely are fired by this zealotry. They believe that the end of the world is nigh. It's going to begin in an area near Aleppo called Tavik, which happens to be the name of the propaganda rag that ISIS puts out every month. But the control, the command of this organization is a little more pragmatic and much savvier than that. And, you know, they don't, for instance, really spend a lot of time at all fighting the Assad regime in Syria. They claim to be at war with him because he's a Nusayri, he's an Alawite, and they're Sunni. So what do? They cultivate their own land. They take over townships and areas and cities in Syria that had been overtaken or liberated by more moderate forces ranged against Assad. And then they play a game of divide and rule. There's very little that's messianic or deranged about that. From a military perspective, it's very smart. You know, let the other guys do the heavy lifting and bleed themselves white, fighting a much more advanced conventional army. Then you come in and you inherit.
But Michael, your book is so brilliant, and I know you know a lot more about it than I do. Why can't they be stopped? They're only an army. Why is it that they're not? Here's Saudi Arabia trying to stop them in Yemen, and they can't do it. What's wrong with the picture?
What they are succeeding from the most, I would argue, is the current U.S. policy position, or the optics of geopolitics in the region. The United States has now embarked on a path of rapprochement with the Islamic Republic of Iran. Iran is the sort of mothership of Shia Islam. I don't mean to say that condescendingly, but it is, and particularly to the Sunnis of the region. From the very beginning, when ISIS was known as al-Qaeda in Iraq, the founder of al-Qaeda in Iraq, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, everyone remembers him. We killed him in 2006. He listed, in order of priority, his enemies. The number one enemy for Zarqawi was the Shia. The Shia of Iran and the Shia of Iraq, which constitutes the majority of the population. So then, for Zarqawi, the Shia were illegitimate Muslims. They were worse than Christians. They were worse than American atheists. His goal was to attack them mercilessly. Remember, he blew up the Golden Mosque in Samarra. He beheaded them. He went on a genocidal rampage against them, but with a Machiavellian plan in mind, that this would prompt an over-retaliation on their part, going after Sunnis, conducting pogroms, ethnic cleansing, mass murder, such that the Sunnis of not just Iraq, but the region, and even beyond the region, the entire Muslim Ummah, would pour into Iraq, thus contributing to a sectarian civil war, a bloodbath. And out of that mess, the Sunnis would reign triumphant again. So even Zarqawi had a political ambition, which was to capture Baghdad. ISIS wants...
Let me back it up for a minute. We're speaking with Michael Weiss. His great book is called ISIS, Inside the Army of Terror, which I do highly recommend. I want them to remember that Saddam Hussein was a Sunni. They were a Sunni minority ruling a Shia majority, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Then Saddam was overthrown, and the Shiites took over Iraq and conducted atrocities of their own. Isn't that correct?
It is true, yes. They were going after Sunnis. They were torturing Sunnis, capturing them. You know, a lot of the Shia who were in the security forces or the interior ministry or the health and transport ministry actually moonlighted as members of death squads. Remember the Mahdi army under Muqtada al-Sadr?
Yes. So, but you know, but we look in from the outside. We live in this little greenhouse called America where we're worried about things such as Harvey Weinstein did or did he not grope a woman from Italy. And I sit and I look at it from two different worlds. We have civilization here and we have animals there who want to bring it all down. But you actually are saying the leadership isn't that insane. They don't want to bring it all down. But let's bring it back home, Michael. Are they a threat to us here on the homeland?
I'm sorry, say that last bit again.
Is ISIS a threat to us here in America?
Yes, absolutely. They're a threat to us in America because they are looking to be, to build themselves as the vanguard jihadi force on the planet. And the way that they do that, the way that they impress people, their rank and file, is by conducting spectacular terrorist attacks. And right now, they used to be part of Al-Qaeda. The two organizations split a little over a year ago. The way that they're fighting each other, meaning Al-Qaeda versus ISIS, the competition, the game of one-upmanship, is being played out on the streets of the Middle East, North Africa, Europe, and eventually probably the United States. So in France, the Charlie Hebdo massacre and then the Kosher Marketplace massacre. Perfect example. Charlie Hebdo was Al-Qaeda, and then the Kosher Market was ISIS-inspired.
So, but who controls that here? Do we have a good infrastructure in place to stop them?
Well, look, I think we've been remarkably lucky. I would say that counterterrorism police work, what the FBI has been doing, has been pretty good. But let's put it this way. We're now at a rate of that one operation or one terrorist attack being thwarted per month that we know of, right? That's
mm-hmm.
the complaints that are made public. It's only a matter of time before one of those attackers or those plots slips through the cracks and something goes off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now the last case of these two girls in Brooklyn, they were tinkering around with propane gas tanks. Not an easy device to turn into an explosive. You have to know what you're doing. And they, if you read the complaint, they sounded like idiots and amateurs. But that's not what worries me. What worries me is that what you would call the lone wolf attack, a guy who's in his parents' basement, signed onto Skype, listens to the sermons of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the head of ISIS, or the sermons of any other ISIS clerics, downloads the literature, downloads the instruction manuals for how to build bombs or whatever, is inspired by the ideology, and then, you know, doesn't even have to build a bomb, can go out and buy an assault rifle and shoot up a school.
Michael, come on, do you speak Arabic, by the way? I know your co-author is Hassan, who must be an Arabic speaker. Are you at all Arabic fluent?
Yes, and one of the reasons I enlisted Hassan is because I don't have Arabic, unfortunately.
No, I'm not trying to criticize you. I'm not Arabic speaking, but obviously you know what you're talking about. Here's the big question for me. Where's Israel in all of this?
Well, Israel, it's interesting. Probably a little over a year ago, judging from what I can pull together from open source materials, Israel actually started helping some of the moderate Syrian rebels for the very simple fact that they want to protect their interests and their border in the Golan Heights. In southern Syria today, the biggest threat to Israel is Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps, because Iran is essentially propping up the Assad regime. Iran is actually bringing in Afghan Shia fighters. We talk about foreign fighters in Syria and Iraq as though they're only going to join ISIS. Not true. The majority, in fact, of foreign fighters in Syria are going to prop up the Assad regime. And it's a consortium of sectarian militia groups and death squads built by Iran.
This is important. This is very confusing to most people, but I'm following you because I read your book. Now, Assad is a murderous, psychotic dictator. That we agree on. But if Assad were to fall, wouldn't ISIS take over Syria?
It's not even actually a matter of ISIS taking over Syria. I think the greater threat is Jabhat al-Nusra, which is the official al-Qaeda franchise in Syria. Remember, the two used to be one and the same, but they split. And technically, they're at war with each other. So as we're bombing ISIS, we're also bombing Jabhat al-Nusra. But Jabhat al-Nusra is gaining strength in Syria because the moderates that we claim to have supported, we actually never really did in any meaningful fashion. And we know why we didn't support them, because it's been reported.
Michael, if I were an average guy listening to you and I talk about your book, ISIS Inside the Army of Terror, and whatnot, I'd say, you know what, let them all kill each other. It sounds like Shia killing Sunni, screw them all. I mean, is that the right attitude?
No, it's not the right attitude for a number of reasons. Number one, I think that's deeply immoral, and I like to think that at its best moments, the U.S. has a values-based foreign policy. But even if you don't care about Arab lives, and I do, actually, if you don't care about Arab lives and you think, let the region burn, doesn't concern us, we'll bury our head in the sand over here, I've got news for you. We might not be interested in the Middle East, but the Middle East continues to be interested in us.
And hold on. That's a very important point, and it ties a lot into Hillary Clinton's campaign in many ways, because she's not going to talk about it. Michael Weiss, the book is Inside the Army of Terror. Michael, please stay with us when we return across America. We'll continue this important discussion and see what the threat really is to us here in America from ISIS. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN.
The president gave a speech today that was ludicrous, saying climate change is a primary national security threat, without mentioning the threat of radical Islam in the form of ISIS. And we're talking about that with a man who knows an awful lot about it, Michael Weiss. His book is ISIS, Inside the Army of Terror. It's a phenomenal book. Very detailed, very clear. Michael, welcome back. We only have a little bit of time. How is there a chance that Saudi Arabia could fall?
Well, the Saudis certainly fear that that might happen. They're very terrified that with the Iranian-backed Houthis at their doorstep in Yemen, that they're next. Do I think they're in danger of any kind of imminent state takeover or collapse? No. But then again, I've been surprised before in the region. I'm sure I'd be surprised again.
I studied the history of the Arab conquest way back after Muhammad died. And in a little over 25 years, they conquered a huge amount of territory in a manner very similar to what ISIS is doing today, Michael, using small armies of 1,000 or less and inflicting maximum terror upon local populations, one town after another, making whole nations fall and armies flee, leaving their weapons. When the 30,000 Iraqi troops fled Mosul, they captured tanks and such. Whatever happened to the Abrams tanks that ISIS captured? I've been dying to get that answer.
Well, I think a lot of them were actually hit by U.S. warplanes. The nice thing about ISIS capturing American materiel is that American materiel is very easy to track from the sky. I actually wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal with Mike Pregent, who's a U.S. Army veteran, served in Iraq, about how that's not the biggest concern. The other thing with driving Humvees and Abrams tanks in the desert is it requires specialists and technicians who know how to do maintenance on those vehicles. So it's not easy for these ISIS guys. Even Saddam is...
There's so much more in your book. Bottom line, Michael, should we be frightened of ISIS here in America?
Will we be fighting them here? I think they're definitely trying to fight us here.
Michael Weiss, the book is ISIS Inside the Army of Terror. Thanks for being with us this Friday. When I return, more on the Savage Nation, including readings from Michael Savage's Countdown to Mecca. Don't miss it. Stay with me. I'll be right back on The Savage Nation.
Join The Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The young people here today, you remind me of something that Bob Marley once said. You know, I went to his house yesterday. I thought I'm only 5 minutes from his house. I got to go check it out. You know, one of the displays has to do when he was shot. Right before a concert he was supposed to give, trying to bring the political factions in Jamaica together. And he was treated for his wounds, and he went ahead with the program, went ahead with the show. And somebody asked, well, why would you do that? He said, the people who are trying to make this world worse are not taking the day off. Why should I? So none of us can afford to take the day off. And I want you to have every chance, every tool you need to make this world better. So, today I'm announcing nearly $70 million in U.S. investments in education, training, and employment programs for our young people throughout Latin America and the Caribbean.
Your president has had just such a successful relationship with Iran that he rewarded himself with a long-planned visit to Jamaica and now Cuba. And since there are no consequences to any of his actions, he just gave away $70 million that we know of. Not for American kids who are in need, not for scholarships for poor American kids, but for Caribbean and Latin American people. Isn't that great, living in Pax Americana?
Well, that's only one of the topics. There are many others. If you've been listening to the show for the last couple hours, we've covered an awful lot, including ISIS and the Army of Terror. If you care to comment on any of the topics I've touched on, 855-407-282, 1-855-400-SAVAGE will get you to speak to more people than you meet for the rest of your life. Let's begin on line number one. One, you're on the Savage Nation station, topic and name.
Yeah, Adam, I'm with WJR. I just want to say I feel like it's an extreme disrespect to the families of the Boston bombing victims that they're even dragging out the whole sentencing process. I feel like he should have been sentenced yesterday.
I don't. You're tired of the Boston bombing trial?
No, I feel like there's. I'm so sick how they're just dragging the whole process out. They should just hurry up and get it over with.
Well, why is Nidal Malik Hassan not executed, the perpetrator of the massacre at Fort Hood? Why is he still alive?
Good question. I blame the trial lawyers.
No, I blame Barack Hussein Obama and the Defense Department. I blame the CIA. I blame all of the intelligence agencies who are keeping him alive. He's still alive. Why? He did this crime in 2009. Do you think if he were a white male with blonde hair and blue eyes and wore a cross, you think he'd still be living?
Absolutely not. I feel like they would go right for his throat on day two.
They would have hung him on day three, right. That's all. 855-407-282. Next is line number two. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation from line two.
Hi, this is John from New York on WABC.
Yes, sir. What's on your mind tonight?
Yes, I'm a teacher. I deal with anger almost daily. I work in White Plains, just a little bit north of New York City, about 20 miles. Just today, kids are angry, tell them to do their work, have your presentations in the format I requested. A kid wants to get on the computer and do the work right there in class while we're doing the presentations.
In other words, they don't respect a teacher anymore. It's all broken down.
Oh, that's all gone. That's without saying, Michael. It's ridiculous.
Now, why do you think that? I mean, we know where the breakdown started. It started in the 1960s with the permissive society. We understand that. But don't you agree with me that because of the lawlessness of the president getting away with one crime after another, the children are picking it up?
Here's how I see it, if you please permit me. I'm a biblical believer. Life is about a family. God is about a father with his children, taking good care of them, but they must honor him always in order to get the benefits.
So you're saying because of the large number of fatherless families, the children are like wildings?
Probably so. Probably so.
Well, you can't blame the women who are trying to raise the children alone. I don't think you're doing that. You could just as well blame the men who don't want to be men.
You know, anybody can take the low road and place the blame game, but it's inexcusable to be blameless.
Well, what's the solution to this problem? We're going to force the unwed mothers to marry? I mean, what's the answer to this?
Solution is leadership that is not into the leadership because of the money, unattached.
All right, I hear you. What you're saying is, as a teacher, the kids are breaking down. There's no order, no respect. That's been going on a long time. And as a result, society is devolving. It's coming apart. There are many other topics we've touched on, including the threat of ISIS. The president gave us a big whopper again today or yesterday when he said that the Islamic State is not our primary national security threat. But once again, he put out the big lie in clip four that you have to hear over and over again. Listen to it.
The Pentagon has already said that climate change is a primary national security threat.
Come on. And
we are working with the Department of Defense to start preparing
about
for that and mitigating for that. And a lot of our international policy and national security policy is centered around the very real concerns that that's going to raise.
See, he's a mad president. When you have a madman, a lunatic, with a radical left-wing agenda in the White House, when he warps the Defense Department, who turned into nothing but a bunch of ushers, he has ushers running around in the Pentagon. Now climate change is on their mind. Not ISIS, not protecting us from the mad bombers running around in the country, but now
Oh, global warming is the real threat. Climate change, that's what the Defense Department is? A stooge of this madman? So you see, the country is breaking down at every level. Every level. What the heck does the Defense Department have to do with climate change? And then the Pope, to top it off, here's a man who should be talking about morals, values, Catholic doxy. Again, another one marching around climate change is the Pope's problem. How is it that you're hearing Marxism, or I call him Lenin's Pope? How is it that even the Pope is in on the act? How did this happen? As I stated a few months ago, the only thing the Pope knows about the weather is that when it rains, his attendants hold up an umbrella. That's the extent of his knowledge of meteorology. Yet he's marching around, too, that in order to save the planet, it's a climate change. Him, Obama, it's like a seamless story. Seamless storyline. Worldwide Marxism on the march. And we voted in November to throw this college rubbish out with the bathwater. And instead, they tripled down and made it worse. Next line is number three, KSFO Radio. What's on your mind on line three?
A couple quick comments. One, ISIS. Now, 1989, I have been telling everybody I know, based on my knowledge of Scripture, okay, that the beast of Daniel is the same beast as Revelation.
All right, here we go. Look, sir, I don't mock the Bible, but how is that going to help us today? I had an expert on the issue of ISIS. Why don't you boil it down for us non-biblical readers? What is the bottom line?
Now, boil it down is, the fact is that the Muslims believe that Muhammad cannot return until all Christians, Jews, non-believers are subdued, correct?
Well, I know, right. They have that psychotic, genocidal, homicidal madness, yes.
They will stop at nothing, and our Muslim president is allowing it.
So you actually believe he's an enabler? You think this is why he's trying to tell us about global warming instead of global Islamic terror? I got you to laugh anyway. That's good to laugh on a Friday with the big weekend coming up. Look what we have to put up with Sunday. The announcement by Hillary Clinton about being the president. I mean, it wasn't bad enough with Obama. I know I shouldn't have said the word. That was bad enough. Then we had Rubio is on Monday. She's on Sunday. Now, what are her qualifications? What accent will she speak in? What tongue will she choose to deliver her sermon in on Sunday? None. Twitter. To show how withered she is. Imagine this. Only in America could this woman get away with running for the presidency. I don't mind a woman. I'll take a woman. I'll take a Joan of Arc running, someone who could save America. Women have saved many civilizations. Women are greatly inspiring. Women have saved many societies and civilizations. But please... please take Hillary Clinton, for example. Take her, please. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. A Tale of Two Cities. I walk and live in one world, and I see another every time I walk around the streets. I see our world of civilization, and I see their world of death and destruction. And I wonder when the two will collide. I mean, they have collided numerous times, and it's only a matter of time until the psychotic view of the Islamists collide with us once again. And when we have a vacuum in leadership, as we do right now, the collision is liable to be cataclysmic. That's my feeling. Let's go to the callers, KKOB Radio, line number 8. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. Well, you know, we talk about ISIS, but you should be referring them to them as Obama's military. Because that's who they are. We, you know, unfortunately, we've been funding them and everything. And you look at Iran. Iran is the only country really fighting ISIS at this time.
Well, wait. You're overgeneralizing. The U.S. and Iran are fighting ISIS. For example,
we've also helped fund them, and nope. We shouldn't be. We've been involved with ICE. We helped get them set up, and everything. And Obama's not really fighting them too much. I think
there's one point that I agree with you on, which is that he doesn't seem to be fighting ISIS with any
real strength. I mean, I don't understand what kind of war this is. Why is he doing a mission here and a mission there? Why is he not taking them on and wiping them out? I don't understand. You know, sometimes I think that I misinterpret the whole picture because I'm only a man looking from the outside in, and there's only so much any of us can really know as to what's going on. I'm not privy to inside information. Is it possible, I ask myself, that Obama is so smart and the administration is so clever that they actually want the Sunnis and the Shia to be killing each other, culling the herd? I'm saying, is that what they really want, to let them all kill each other, to decimate each other in war? I don't know. Sometimes I wonder, maybe they're smarter than we think. Because I ask myself, if ISIS is such a grave threat, why aren't they attacking Israel? Or turn it around, why isn't Israel attacking ISIS? And then some days I wake up and I say, none of this makes sense to me. Raping, killing, murdering, kidnapping, and not a word from the feminists, not a word from the homosexual movement, not a word from a Human Rights Watch, nothing. The worst atrocities we have seen since Hitler, short of the gas chambers, are going on right in front of our eyes, and not a word from the Walking Dead. I see the Grateful Dead are giving another farewell concert. I wish they'd give one already and be gone. Can the human rights activists give us a farewell concert and do something? Can the feminists give us a farewell concert and say something about what ISIS is doing? Can the gay lobbies do something and say something about what radical Islam is doing to gays? Please, why don't you show us that you're really sincere about human rights, gay rights, and women's rights by talking about the worst violations going on the planet right now instead of attacking soft targets like the Republican Party? That's what I keep asking myself. And then some nights I have very bad visions, really bad visions. I remember the Iran-Iraq war of many a decade ago, where over 1 million young Muslim men were made to kill each other. And the Iranians were running young men who had never fought before over minefields. He forced them to run over Iraqi minefields. They were being butchered. That's what Iran did in the past. They killed each other. It was unbelievable. I said, what happens if I wake up one day and 3 million Muslims are swarming over the Golan Heights into Israel? What would Israel do if there was a human swarm of 1 million to 3 million fanatical Muslims onto Jerusalem? Tell me what Israel would do. What would their Hobson's choice be? Why, Israel would have only one choice, which is to bomb them, machine gun them, which is just what they want. They would then show that the Jews are the most bloodthirsty people on the planet. Isn't that what your friends at San Francisco State University want to happen? Isn't that what your friends at SFSU and San Jose State University want to happen? Isn't that exactly what they'd like to happen? So you see, we're living in very dangerous times, my friends. It's not as clear as you may think. And God only knows what's going to happen. Very heavy scene. Attorney General Holder reinforces rules against soliciting prostitutes. Attorney General Eric Holder, he's still there. I thought he resigned. Has issued a memo to Justice Department employees reminding them that soliciting prostitutes is against agency rules and can lead to suspension or termination. I wonder why he had to do that. I don't understand that one. You mean members of the Justice Department were using hookers in Washington, D.C.? That's unheard of. Latest on America's summit, Quisling President O says growth must help all. Key to success is growing the middle class. Again, preaching income inequality, attacking the wealthy, stirring up the masses wherever he goes, giving away money as though it's his, and on to Cuba. FBI says a man plotted suicide bomb attack at Kansas military base. Stage is being set for historic Obama-Castro meeting Saturday. Apparently, he did such a good job in his deals with Iran that I now can't wait to meet the dictators of Cuba. He just can't get enough of dictatorships, apparently. I guess they say birds of a feather flock together. So Sunday's a very big day. I don't know how we're going to take it. I don't know. We're going to just bite our nails all night Friday and all day Saturday, not knowing what to do with ourselves, because none other than Hillary Clinton's going to announce on Sunday on Twitter, don't you know? Guess what? She's running for the presidency. In 140 characters, including spaces or less. The only question remains is, which accent will she be using? Will it be this one? Robert, let's play the one I suspect she won't be using.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far. far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me.
Okay, that's it. The circus is coming to town. The chief clown is in Cuba, making nice with dictators. We're upping the stakes. The Republican clowns have started their act in the right wing, the right circle. Meanwhile, the left wing is about to have their clown ushered out onto the stage on Sunday. Isn't it great?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Savage. What you're listening to, this is not a thought coming in on your filling from a UFO. It's actually a human being called Michael Savage. I know many of you said, well, what is this guy? Is this a talk show or what? What is he talking about? I have no idea what he's saying. But listen another few seconds. I'm actually speaking English. This is what English sounds like. This is what it actually sounds like. It doesn't sound like people from England. They don't speak English. But nevertheless, here we go. So I'm walking around before the show. Everything I look at now, I see with two minds. One is the world I live in, and one is the world that's coming, unless they are annihilated from the planet with all their spawn. All their spawn onto the third gen. They have to be wiped off the planet. You have no idea what's coming. It's like a tsunami, a tidal wave sitting out there about to sweep over America because of open borders, because of a, if not an open, let us say, collaborator with them, let us say a wink, wink, nod, nod government that claims we're winning the war against ISIS when in fact they're making advances. I woke up this morning and I see the Saudi Air Force couldn't stop them in Yemen. They've retreated into their caves to weapons that they hid up in the mountains. And now the Saudis have to send in ground troops, and they lost a lot of ground troops the last time they went to war with any of these crazy maniacs in an earlier incarnation, that is. And that's happening. We have an army, we have a navy, we have an air force, and it's given to global warming issues. The nut in the White House has the audacity while visiting Cuba to say that that's the greatest threat to our civilization. Global warming, and I don't understand why he's not immediately taken away with men with butterfly nets. This is insanity. It's insanity. Pure insanity. So I look at even the shoemaker, the guy who polishes shoes in the Embarcadero Center. You know, it's early in the morning. And here's a guy just shining a shoe. Look at civilization through the eye of a shoe shiner. And you see, what man wants a shoe shine? A man who wants to look good. A man who wants to go out there and sell something, or a man who wants to go out there and do something. So he has his shoe shined. It's the mark of civilization. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? And then you look around San Francisco at all the beaten up people, many of whom have the money to buy clothing. They look like they've just come out of a Salvation Army giveaway center. Everyone tries to outdo everyone else with ugly clothing, malfitting, ripped shoes. The men don't know how to dress. The women look, all of them, like they just came out of, I don't know what? There's no clothing anymore. What happened to the clothing industry in the country? Everyone tries to outdo everyone else with looking bad, to try and identify with the losers of society. Dirty, filthy, downbeaten. That's all. Walking around San Francisco this morning, I inhaled the great Bay Air coming up off the bay, and I saw two worlds, the builders and the destroyers. I'm seeing the whole world through a set of different eyes since ISIS has started its Hitler-like rampage in the Middle East. What I see is the world we live in and the world that they live in and would like to drag us into. I don't think you understand what's at stake. I do. As I walked past the coffee shop, I saw people serving coffee and I saw people drinking coffee. I walked past the florist who was setting up for the day. He bought the flowers from a wholesaler down at the wholesale flower market probably 4 a.m. He had to invest capital and the hope that people would come by and buy his flowers today. As I walked past the luggage store, I saw the person putting their luggage out, dusting it off and making it attractive to the customers that would show up. Everywhere I turn, I see these most beautiful buildings in San Francisco, built by the builders. And yet the city is filled with destroyers. Who are the destroyers? The Occupy movement. They have never built even an anthill. They're the vermin of our society. And yet Nancy Pelosi, one of the richest women in the history of the world, has the nerve to embrace the Occupy movement as though they are the harbingers of civilization when they're the harbingers of our death and demise. Everywhere you turn in San Francisco, you see the builders at work. People who take a chance and buy a building, clean it up, fix it up, rent it out, hope to make a profit. Capitalism at work. That's what built civilizations. That's what built civilizations from day one. Not the destroyers, not ISIS, who would blow it all up and enslave us with their belief in the single sufficiency of a single book called the Quran, the 9th century throwbacks. Two worlds, whether it's the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, they're in the world of the creators, the builders. And yet we have in America the leftists, who are the destroyers, along with their cousins in ISIS, who would destroy the entire world. Just an observation. Beautiful morning. And you know how this all started? Do you remember in the 1960s, those of you who remember the 60s, everyone was talking about various and sundry books. And one of them was Freud's From Civilization and Its Discontents. I don't know if you know how important it is that I tell you about this. Ideas matter. Ideas are the cause of everything. ISIS is raging on one idea, which is to kill everybody else, including fellow Muslims who are not fanatical enough. They're basing it on the idea of a 9th century fanatic that they're following. You understand that? And it's only ideas that can save us from them. So you go back and you look at what happened to this society from the 1960s. You saw degenerates like Allen Ginsberg, Timothy Leary, and some lawyers who destroyed the society, along with the radical feminists who I could name like on the fingers on my hand. They ripped society apart. And as a result, let me go backwards, but there's a little bit more to it. A lot of the people who were very heavily into the counterculture movement of the 60s would always try to act very intellectual and say, oh, you know, Freud wrote Civilization and His Discontents. I was like, yeah, really, man. That society's really screwed up, right? Well, what was the alternative? Well, it was moving to Woodstock, I guess, and living off the land and getting chlamydia. I mean, that's the alternative? Living with chlamydia? That's the title of the autobiography of Woodstock. Living with chlamydia for 50 years. I'm not talking about their cousin. So a lot of people thought that by leaving civilization, they would find something better, more meaning. But it was all part of the hate America, hate civilization mentality. Instead of buying a shiny new car, they bought a broken down Volkswagen van. What are they driving today? I have no idea. I mean, they're not riding a horse. They're not sitting on the back of a water buffalo. They're all riding cars. And all they do is mutter about global warming. It's a continuation of the same falsehood that civilization is no good. What can you do? I see Harvey Weinstein was cleared of a sex abuse charge, which gives meaning to the statement, in America, it's not who you grope, but who you know. No, it's not who you grope, it's who you know. Harvey Weinstein cleared of all charges, a real shocker. I didn't think that would take too long. Meanwhile, justice has not yet been served with the Fort Hood massacre people. Nidal Hassan, remember the Muslim? Remember Nidal Hassan, the Palestinian-American convicted of fatally killing 13 people, shooting 30 more in cold blood at Fort Hood? Well, Obama finally gave around to giving them Purple Hearts. But this piece of garbage, this piece of filth, this subhuman is still living. Why is he not dead? Can anyone explain to me who's keeping Nidal Hassan alive? I mean, if he was Timothy McVeigh, who had done a thing like this, meaning a blonde, blue-eyed Christian wearing a cross, married with children, goes to a church, do you think he'd be alive all these years after killing so many people? This piece of garbage did this in November of 2009, but he's a Muslim. And as you well know, under the Muslim president, or I mean the Christian president, or whatever, there's two sets of laws, and you don't want to antagonize the Muslim world. So he killed 13, injured 30, and he's still living. Oh, by the way, a little update on a major or colonel, whatever this garbage can is. He was still collecting disability payments. Prior to his 2013 trial and conviction, the Muslim, Nidal Hassan, collected nearly $300,000 in military salary. That's your Defense Department at work. Gay and lesbian rights, gay and lesbian propaganda, diversity training, women who can't fly running the Air Force, women who never drove a rowboat running the Navy. But Nidal Hassan, still living. Update on him, August 28, 2014, his attorney announced that Hassan had written a letter to the head of the ISIS group, the Islamic Murderers, and he said he wants to be made a citizen of the Islamic State. And he's still living. Unbelievable. In America, it's not who you grope, but who you know. In America, it's not who you perform terror upon. It's who you're connected to. Why is Obama now gallivanting off to Cuba after failing on the world stage? The man tripped on his Pinocchio nose. He tripped on the Pinocchio nose with Iran. And he gets away with it because of guys like Thomas Friedman of the New York Times. Men who have no shame. Men who have no conscience. Men who would have worked happily for another dictatorship at another time. At least I think so. How can they justify going to bat for this character who is a walking wreckage? And then there's the police beatings. Starting to bother me. Now a horseback beating. A shocker. First the guy gets shot in the back the other day. You know where I stand on that. Now you watch a horseback beating. Deputies in Southern California. A bunch of them, 11, I don't know how many, beating up a man after a horse chase. He's on the ground. He puts his hands behind his back to be cuffed after they get him off the horse. And they almost beat him to death. Kicking him in the head. Stomping on him. Why? Why do you think so many police seem to be breaking down in America? I have a theory. And here's my theory. They live in such a lawless society where the governor of the state of California is a lawless criminal who opens the borders to illegal aliens, which is a crime, including criminal aliens, including diseased aliens, giving away welfare to non-citizens, that he's committing one of the greatest crimes you could imagine. We have a president who floods America with illegal aliens. Thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. Meets with dictators, breaks our laws on a regular basis. So the police, who are on the front lines, are cracking up. They ask themselves every day as they put on their vests and kiss their wives and children goodbye. They ask why they should follow the law. That's number one. Number two, the police are ruled by feminists. They're ruled by constraints that are out of control. I'm not justifying what the police may be doing in these cases, but I'm trying to explain from a psychological point why so many of them seem to be snapping. They can't take the pressure they're under. Again, not to justify shooting the guy the other day. I'm on record with that one. Nor beating the guy on the horse. I'm on record with that one. I'm doing this as a radio psychologist. So many police departments seem to be cracking under the strain of the oppressive, liberal, socialist, lawless government. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. What do we have to look forward to this weekend? The Hildebeest is going to make an announcement? Are you serious? This piece of guava on the jungle floor is now running for office. What qualifications does Hillary have to be president? Would it be her track record as Secretary of State? Let's make a list of the wonderful things she has achieved as Secretary of State. Let's see. She destroyed the Middle East. She turned our allies into enemies and our enemies into allies. That immediately in a sane nation would disqualify her. But then again, sane nations don't permit men like Thomas Friedman to go to journalism school. The most they could do is run a couple of kosher delis in Boca Raton if they had a family with money. I don't even think that they can get to that stage. What on what campaign is she going to run? Well, I think the hint is pretty clear. Income inequality. She gets money from Morocco, Saudi Arabia. How about that for income inequality? How about campaign fund inequality? How do they get away with it? Answer, Thomas Friedman of the New York Times and other fellow travelers. So what can I tell you? So I don't know what accent she's going to use when she announces on Twitter on Sunday that she's going to run for office. Oh, that is so big a deal. She's announcing on Twitter to show how with it and cool she is. Ooh, look at that. Look at that old woman, man. Oh, she's not old. She's making her announcement on Twitter. Well, that's pretty good. Well, ISIS makes announcements on Twitter, too, now. I mean, that's not that exciting. Announcement in 140 characters or less, including spaces. Let's see. I survived a sexist husband. Vote for me. I'm Hillary Clinton. Let's see. I was the worst Secretary of State in history. Vote for me. I'm a woman. Hillary Clinton. Let's see. Don't believe the right wing about Benghazi. I had nothing to do with it. Vote for me. I'm Hillary Clinton. Let's see. My concept of the Arab Spring turned into the Arab Winter. I'm Hillary Clinton. Vote for me. But I still don't know what accent she's liable to use because she's an expert. She's like a Charlie McCarthy of the political world. You got to hand it to her. She's very talented. She can speak in different tongues in front of Jewish audiences with a rising inflection, because if they're older Jews, they used to speak with rising inflections. No one does anymore. They have to be over 80, I think, to speak with a rising inflection. What'd she say? Excuse me, Minnie, what'd she say? So she would speak in that accent. And then the famous, I don't know if it's going to be a millennial accent, Gen Y accent, Gen X accent, or it could be the black church accent. Listen carefully.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me.
I can't believe it. I mean, do I live in the stupidest country on earth? I used to mock Uruguay when I was a kid. When I was a kid growing up, I'd read the Daily News. I'd look at what's going on in other countries. Women were pregnant at 9. There's always like a story about a girl 9 who had a baby in Peru. I used to look at, what? I was in the fourth grade. There were 9-year-old girls. I was like, scratch my head. They were pregnant in Peru? I don't understand. How could you get pregnant in Peru at 9? It must have been the cocaine or the coca leaf. I didn't know. I didn't understand it. But I would see all sorts of things that made no sense. A child fell out of a fifth-floor window, I remember, and they would have front page stories of child falls from fifth floor and lives, and they would like show an arrow, then he would bounce off an awning, hit the ground, dust himself off, and go to school the next day. I don't understand. There's all sorts of different people on the earth. So now we're facing a Hitler raging across the globe called ISIS. Hitler's back. He's speaking Arabic and wearing a headscarf. He's not wearing a swastika. Raging in an out-of-control blitzkrieg the way the Vikings were raging in their time. Conduct themselves the way the Huns did, decimating, killing, raping, kidnapping, murdering. And she's talking about income inequality, and Goofball is talking about global warming. The Pentagon confirmed that our biggest threat is global warming, it's not ISIS. No wonder they can't beat ISIS, if all the schmucks in the Pentagon are working on... All right, guys, here's what we're doing. They bring in the feminists. Forget about ISIS. It's not real. It's not happening. They're not Islamic. Just put it aside. There's no war over there, okay? Your new war is global warming. So they want to keep their pensions and their jobs, and they know what to do. All right, global warming, down the line. Everyone write papers on global warming. And then they write papers on global warming. So again, it's like I'm living in Brobbingdang. It's a world upside down. It's crazy. Nothing makes sense to me. Nothing. Everything's crazy. We're living in a mad world. Savage.